Welcome back to the Introduction to Dialectical Behavior Therapy with Lisa Herpelsheimer of Wise Mind Limited. This work is based upon the work of Marsha Linehan, PhD, and her colleagues who researched DBT starting in the 90s and continuing all the way on to present day. We also look at neuropsychology and how that influences emotion dysregulation and how we can become helpful to persons who are basically suffering with these repeated intense emotional experiences. So I use the word suffering on purpose. One of the things that dialectical behavior therapy brought us was a more empathetic stance towards persons who are experiencing repeated intense emotional arousal and are experiencing a lot of life problems as a result of these repeated emotional intensity experiences. So, as I talked about in the biosocial model, I was reviewing with you how biology does tune us up to have a certain level of threshold for emotional experience. And some persons are going to have a stronger, faster emotional response system. It's going to be more sensitive, nuanced to the environment, and experiences may have well shaped the intensity of an emotional response. So these are all factors that are interrelated. The area that we get to intervene in DBT is we understand ourselves as part of the environment, just as you are part of the environment, as part of this person's support system. So that's good news in that we may not be able to change biology per se, right, and how someone was born, right, with their emotional system. However, we do have a chance to really intervene on a level that we think is very effective in DBT when we commit ourselves to that. So that's also why it's important to get away from that identified patient model, look more towards a participant model as well as a family systems model. So when I mentioned the issue of validation and invalidation, that very well could have raised some questions for many of you, which was, how can I validate, you know, my loved one when it seems like their emotion is either coming out of nowhere or it's so intense? I wouldn't have felt that way myself. This just doesn't seem to make sense. What I asked you to do was to look for the kernel of truth. And the reason I asked you to look for that in someone's emotional experience, which is also, of course, rooted in their learning experience and how they perceive the environment, I asked you to look for that because we want to be able to connect on those things that are universal and that are things that we can say would be part of a person's normal experience if they saw the world in that way and also had that emotional loading. So when someone is explaining feeling really very down, awful about themselves, right? The example I had given was giving away a seat at lunchtime. You know, we didn't want you to go towards the direction of saying, well, that wouldn't have bothered me, or, you know, toughen up, or that girl's not really a nice girl anyway. Why do you want to be friends with her? We don't want you to go that direction. We want you to go the direction of that would hurt, right? That would be, that might make me feel very lonely if that had happened to me. And I think it makes sense that you're feeling some loneliness. It looks like you're having some tears. You know, you're inviting that person to share more about their emotional experience with you. You have such an opportunity, particularly with a teenager that you're still raising, that's still at home with you, you know, to really have a chance to intervene and shape their understanding of the emotional landscape. And the thing is, around ages 11, 12, 13, that's when we start to see children really making strong, overt efforts to self-regulate. And that's also when we start seeing a lot of problems that tend to emerge. Social problems get more complicated, right, in middle school. I think most of us would agree with that. Your world can become much more flooded with social stimuli that can be really painful and difficult to manage. You might have some other factors on board that are making it difficult to have an awareness of what you're feeling at any given moment and how to actually respond in an adaptive way. So even though the people I work with tend to be very bright and they might be gifted academically or creative in their creative works, they're very gifted, for example, when it comes to the emotional world, not as much. So your role as a support person is to learn how to validate the valid, the kernel of truth, the thing that makes universal sense, which is listening for the emotion. When I ask you to validate, I am not asking you to agree with the person. I'm not asking you to be their cheerleader. right? Some people can be invalidating even when they're saying, honey, oh, it's okay. You know, let me, you know, basically let me soothe you. But they're not really giving that feedback of, I get how this makes sense. I get how intense this is for you. I might not even use that word intense. I'm just using it for illustrative purposes here. But even the well-meaning person who tells you all of these stories about how they dealt with a similar situation, that can be inadvertently invalidating. So again, listen for the emotion and speak less. It's one of the biggest things that parents can learn is when your child is dysregulated is not to use too many words, too many stories, right? We really want you to get to the meat and potatoes here, which is going to be the emotional experience. And then you're kind of just opening the door to see if that person can, you know, gently walk through that and start telling you more about their emotion. When they start telling you more about their emotion, you will likely see the emotion dysregulation in terms of the intensity or what might feel like they're attacking you, might sound like that too. You could start really watching that intensity go down a lot like an elevator goes down a number of floors. That's how you know you've validated essentially, quote unquote, the right thing. I don't want you to become hooked into being the therapist. Oh, tell me more about that. Or, you know, getting a therapist speak. Just be you. Just be you. And that might be hard to do because you may feel like you've been trying to do a lot of things, and I'm sure you have, to help your loved one with their more intense emotions, and your confidence, frankly, could be a little shaken at times. So it's going to take a risk on your part to learn something new, and that's that validating of emotions. So I want you to keep that in mind. Validating is not agreeing. It is not saying you acting in a behaviorally dysregulated way is okay with me, right? It's rather that you are okay as a person. Your emotion makes sense in what you're experiencing, right? So that you're not pushing them further away and distancing them. When we have invalidation that occurs in the system, you will tend to see more anxiety. You're going to see more disconnect. There'll be more frustration really for everybody. It's kind of at the very least awkward, if not bigger than that, can become explosive and blaming on all sides. So we have to get away from blame. We have to get away from judgment. We have to get to that kernel of truth. So a lot of people ask, particularly if their loved one has been engaging in self-harming, why is it that people do this? And there's a lot of theories that people might come up with as to why. I won't go into all of them, but let me tell you the basics. And that is, if you're emotionally aroused and it's very uncomfortable, think about the emotional intensity you get. Like if you're speeding to work and you're worried about a meeting, you're going to be late, and then all of a sudden you see cop car lights behind you and you're pretty darn sure you're getting pulled over for speeding. Well, think about that emotional flood you get in your body as well as your mind. That's emotion dysregulation at that very moment, right? That's the, oh gosh, you know, whatever it is completely for, you know, just flooding you. So when you have something like that that happens around shame, loneliness, envy, despair, sadness, a sense of feeling depressed a lot where things aren't very pleasurable or enjoyable. In fact, life has gotten to be quite hard to live as you've been living it. Then you might get someone who's experimented with self-harming and may have gone to the place where they've been self-harming more regularly to deal with their intense emotions. The reason is, simply stated, they do it because it works. It works to down-regulate their emotion fast. It slams on the brakes of that overly alert nervous system, the nervous system that's just on fire with these emotions that they don't know where to go with, right? So when you self-harm, that releases endorphins, and also people will tell you that they might have a sense of a releasing of pressure. It was like a sense of a pressure that was building, 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 and then they finally did the behavior. The problem is when you use that as a way to regulate your emotions, it's not a very good long-term strategy, right, for regulating emotions. And I probably don't have to illustrate that too much as to why. It just tends to be not something a person wants to be doing for many years of their life or have that be their only way of regulating, right? So most people will admit they would rather use a method that's more effective and leads to less long-term suffering. But when you're not knowing what to do and you're not sure who you can talk to about it, and you might already be feeling a lot of shame about it, all of that can conversely reinforce or keep strong that behavior, because it's helped you to slam on the brakes before on that emotional experience. So part of my work is to elevate motivation towards why somebody might want to change that, why somebody might want to take a look at using skills and a whole buffet of skills. Because as I'm sure you're aware, DBT is not just one, you know, sad little list of like 10 skills. It's a lot on how to live. It's that roadmap for living, right? So what if the person was offered a way to not have to live with such suffering and instead begin to start enjoying their life, get a sense of who they are, either again or for the first time? What if they wouldn't have to excuse themselves from a room to go and self-harm, right? It's not very adaptive behavior for when you're at work, for example. It doesn't tend to work well in relationships. It doesn't tend to work well for romantic relationships or family relationships. And it also tends to bring about a sense of shame. So a lot of people will go into shame as well as self-reinforcing this idea, I'm a patient, I can't do better than this, right? And it just really becomes a life of itself, you know? So what we want to do is teach people how to regulate well enough to experience emotion in small doses and to begin to experience what an emotion might be telling them. You know, our bodies actually feel the emotion faster than our mind can interpret it. Our body will feel emotion within about 5 milliseconds of any given prompting event. Now, our mind is going to register that emotion within 100 milliseconds. So while both are very small, the body actually feels it first. That's why you might hear me say in therapy, and you should hear me say, things like, where do you feel that emotion in your body? Like, what does that feel like? Does it feel like a tightness in your chest? Is that a heavy feeling? Do you feel sort of queasy, sick to your stomach? Are you aware of more sweating in your palms? Is your leg bouncing more, right? Your respirations are quick. Or perhaps if it's a joyous emotion, they might be feeling light, an upward energy, as opposed to a downward energy that we might see when someone's feeling sad or lonely. So that's actually a building block of teaching people again what the basic landscape of emotions are. In your Linehan manual, you're going to find a whole section on basic human emotions. It's around pages 254, I believe. And you're going to see what the prompting events are for those kind of emotions. Might be for anger, sadness, loneliness. Shame is one of our biggest ones that we need to watch for, because that can really derail someone. So we need to learn what is shame versus what is guilt. Right? What is, what's happiness versus a feeling of, you know, joy, contentment? You know, what do those things look like? What does it look like when I'm feeling anger? Anger is one of the hardest ones, especially for females in our society generally, to hold and to feel and to express, because it's very much socialized out of us by about age 7. So that's not something that's the person's choice, to have difficulty with feeling their anger. That's something that's a complicated system of social cues, as well as their own intolerance to strong emotion, because it feels very activating. It is not comfortable. It is the cop car lights in the back of the minivan, okay? It's something you don't want to feel. So you push it away, push it away, push it away. My job is to help bring back that emotion into the process as the person's able to regulate. If I bring back too much emotion too fast, the person's going to dysregulate and it's going to be less effective. We're going to just be reinforcing being flooded and feeling ashamed and feeling inadequate to feel one's emotions. So DBT has a lot of these aspects of the art to it. So I'm not asking you to become the therapist. That isn't what your child wants of you. They really need you to be that role model of what does it look like to be emotionally regulated, even when I'm frustrated, right? That doesn't mean denying being frustrated. It's how to express it in that more mature, regulated manner, in a way that respects the rights of others, respects your own values, right? It's kind of that difference between assertive versus aggressive, to kind of oversimplify my message here. But the biggest thing I'm asking you to do is to take a look at your own emotion regulation skills. Do you feel like you're where you want to be? And guess what? Nobody's really 100% where they want to be. This is why it's a growth model. It's a growth path. There's going to be emotions at different times of your life, different seasons of your life that are going to be harder. And maybe ones that, you know, you've kind of deadened with either, you know, maybe having a drink a little bit too much or, and maybe not even all the time, but it's something you've experienced. What is that like to turn to like a substance to deaden your emotion? That's something you can relate to. I'm not saying you're going to process this with your daughter necessarily, right? But that is what I'm talking about, is everyone has an experience of strong emotion that they have not managed as effectively as they think they should and probably know they should, especially in the role of being parents, right? Because that's a lot of pressure role. So it's important to get to that space of empathy as well as growth model for everyone involved. One of the biggest ways you can help your daughter get out of that wasted pain cycle of just using the self-harming behaviors or the denial of emotion is to actually become, over time, in a way that makes sense, in a way that's genuine, that model of emotion regulation for yourself. Emotion regulation can't happen unless you're mindful enough to focus on what you're feeling. Right? To tolerate focusing on that, not just brushing off an emotion, not putting it on someone else and saying, you made me feel this way. No, no, we don't want that. We want to become more responsible for our own emotional responses so that your daughter can see with some transparency what that looks like, right? And how that benefits relationships and how that's done. All right, so that's one area that I think parents can be helpful in breaking up some of these cycles. It's not real obvious. It's notice how I'm not saying I need you to control her out of that particular behavior. If control alone worked, it would have worked already, right? So it's much more complicated than just that. And it's also just as easy as that, right? Which is learning how to regulate our emotional responses in our environment, in our family environment, and what that looks like for ourselves, and how that's maybe more effective. It certainly should be more effective in your own relationships. So keeping those things in mind, that's an area that you can work on. Also, realize that thought clarity isn't really that great when we're emotionally aroused, emotionally intense at that moment, right? So you might have a lot of racing thoughts at that kind of moment. So what do you do with that? That's where you bring your mindfulness in. And mindfulness, we know, has become quite the term lately. The point is, though, mindfulness is on purpose paying attention to one thing at a time. So mindfulness, in terms of trying to figure out what you're feeling, might be becoming more mindful of your body. Aware that I feel a down energy, I feel my stomach twisting, I think this is anxiety for me, this is what anxiety usually feels like. Okay, what's the prompting event for anxiety that makes sense? Okay, I've got this job, you know, evaluation that I'm quite nervous about, I haven't been getting along with my boss, and, you know, it's also, you know, our safety and security rests on this because we need my paycheck, right? So you can kind of look at the ways that it makes sense that you're feeling anxiety. Now, I want you to use your golden and. When you're in my office, you're going to find that there's a golden and symbol, the ampersand, right? So you're going to see that that's there. The golden and is there so that you can basically be practicing acceptance and change. I feel this intense anxiety, and I'm going to be practicing a skill, which might be coping ahead, for example, which is picturing yourself regulated in your boss's office, coming up with a few points that you want to cover during the evaluation that you think are fair and adaptive and things that, you know, an employer would want you to be reflecting on during the time of annual review. You're going to want to look at the bigger picture, right, before you go in for something like this. So you don't want to come into a evaluation blaming your boss for every problem that the company has, for example. It's probably not going to be the most endearing you know, way to interact with your boss at that time. So that would be like kind of coping ahead, not only problem solving and planning something out, but also seeing yourself, you know, seeing yourself regulate through the anxiety, through that high stakes situation. So what becomes important to show your child? Is that you can have an awareness of your emotion, you can regulate your emotion, and that will lead to increased clarity of thought. So then you can more evaluatively check the facts of any given situation. Instead of feeling like your boss is out to get you, you might realize, well, actually, and I checked the facts, there are some cutbacks at the company, and it's not really a statement about me personally, right? That might be an example of checking the facts, because you may have additional information that you need to include. This is also called drawing the circle bigger. These are all higher level cognitive tasks as well as emotional tasks. So again, thinking the connection between brain, body, a thought, and an action that's been planned out deliberately, as well as with reasonable artistry, because you can't plan out every moment of your life, then you'll probably come across as more anxious and controlling, and that would be perhaps less helpful. So what I'm talking about is kind of that art of living that you can show just through what you already are bringing to the table as an adult in this system. You have a beautiful chance to do this, and it's not easy, right? So being mindfully aware of what your emotions are, and then choosing your behaviors, right, based upon what's going to be more adaptive for that situation, what's going to be more effective, not necessarily right and wrong, but more effective versus less effective. If you can get into that energy, then you're going to start getting some consequences that might be looking a lot better. So that's what we call the CBT triangle, thoughts, behaviors, consequences. So if you're not going down the route of emotional intense exposure, right, and I either blow up with it or I self-harm with it or I avoid it at all costs with substances or overspending or something, right, or denying that I'm affected at all by other people, whatever your overuse could have been of something else, you're instead taking a step back and you're allowing yourself the room to be human as well as imperfect. Right? And that you're also showing that growth process yourself. That will also help your daughter feel less alone. And then she may become much more likely to try these different approaches on how do I feel just a little emotion, just enough to tell me, hey, I've got a warning signal on here. There's a warning light on my dashboard of my Ferrari I'm trying to drive. And instead of covering it up, I'm actually going to look at it. I'm going to figure out, am I doing something counter to my values, counter to someone else? Am I doing an old behavior pattern that I really don't think is sustainable, nor that I want to have happening? So what can I do about that? How can I cope ahead for when I'm feeling so dysregulated my mind almost goes blank and not make situations worse? Sometimes we can't solve problems and we can still work really hard not to make them worse. What's making them worse look like? Sometimes that ends up in a hospitalization, right? So that might be the example of making things worse. But there's all these other ways that we do it. And yet really to get in that sweet spot doesn't have to be so unattainable that you have to be overly worried about being the perfect quote-unquote parents. We find that it's secure attachment with parents, knowing that they are loved, knowing that there is an acceptance factor that only a parent can really give, right? Something that's not so fragile that it changes with the parent's mood or with their own mood even for the child. Right? That there's still an abiding, steadfast sense of love and belonging to your family. And there's always room for making repair, making things better, growing together. This will help your daughter feel so much less alone in this major change process of starting to feel her emotions again and starting to tiptoe through the door that you've gently opened here through validation and starting to finally connect with you again in terms of the emotions. Okay, so I'm hopeful that that helps to illustrate a little bit about where the self-harming came from and that it is a mindful, a choice experience to move away from self-harming and move towards using skills. It's also a choice to let yourself experience emotion, and it's also awareness. How much emotion's too much? Maybe sometimes I need to turn the mind, right? Maybe I don't need to be perseverating, maybe thinking on something over and over again. Maybe that's too flooding. So I need to do a healthy distract activity, or I need to do a distress tolerance skill like TIP. Cold water TIP is in your book, which we could talk about at a different time. So there's a lot of different skills that can be used. That's the whole point of DBT, and that's why I believe it works. And you won't, when you get to the point where you'd really kind of consider yourself doing quite well in DBT, it's not like you have to sit there and think, oh, I got to use a DBT skill right now. Certainly sometimes it might occur to you, especially if you're feeling pretty activated and anxious that, you know, you might not do this right, you know. Don't be so worried about that. Instead, get to what is the heart of this model. And that is usually going to come down to human connection, acceptance, the ability to make repairs, the ability to grow, and repeated choice over and over again to try to use these skills and get better at them over time so that the old behaviors, the old dysregulations do not have to be used in order to manage your life emotionally. Thank you.